Sportique is where scooters come from and has been for 25 years. And now, Sportique is also the place for e-bikes. E-bikes from ScootStar, Genuine Scooter Company, and the Jackrabbit, the 20-mile-per-hour, 20-pound mini machine that fits comfortably in the trunk of your car. So, turn to Sportique for all of your scooter needs, parts, service, accessories, and apparel, and now e-bikes. Visit SportiqueScooters.com or their expansive showroom at 160 South Broadway in the shadow of downtown. Sportique, where scooters come from. Miscued sports.
You know, I'm using my laptop. Here we go. Sports! All right. Come on!
There you go.
Yes, sports.
It's good to have that back.
It's good.
It's good to have that back.
This is a sports show, and I'm going to ask Peter a sports thing here real quick. But I failed to mention that I have been keeping up with you because of your column in the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle.
I live in that delivery area,
and they deliver me one, and I always read it, and I always read what you have to say. And there was something you did, and I couldn't remember exactly what you said. But it was something where you made a joke about being bisexual.
Yeah.
And I went to my wife, I went, oh my God, Peter Boyle's bisexual. Did you know this? And I didn't read the whole thing.
The tagline was, all the sex I get, I buy.
That's right. And then I read it and I went, oh, wait, hold on. Sorry, he's not bisexual. Yeah. And I read her the joke. But so
I'm an old man with an old man's life.
Yes.
Trust me, fellas, you're always going to pay. And somehow I think you already know that.
Colin does for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
But no, I enjoy that. I always read that every time I get it. Yeah.
It's
probably great. I was like writing a thing now and then. So I was like reading that. My sports thing was the Rockies. Yeah. Rockies been here since 1993. Horrendous franchise. We were talking about this last week. We said, we're not going to talk about the Rockies. And then we did. And Scott made the very, very good point that it's not that they don't spend. It's not that they don't try to make moves. They just don't know what the fuck they're doing. And that franchise is doomed. It's just doomed. You've seen them since the very beginning. I don't know if you're a huge baseball fan or not, but do you have any kind of opinion or insight on the Rockies? Will they ever be good?
My grandson should be sitting here right now and answering that question. I see.
What's the deal with them?
I think it's ownership.
Absolutely.
I mean, that they need to sell the team. It's interesting to see.
Here's the problem. They don't
need to sell
the team.
Oh, no, it's a cash cow.
Well, to win, they need to sell it.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I know, like, for instance, when the Pirates come to town, everybody I know that grew up in Pittsburgh goes to the game. I mean, we're in this really interesting part.
That's what they live on economically. Because we're a transplant town.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, so when the Pirates come to town or the Cubs come to town, everybody fills the seats and they sell a ton of beer.
Sure.
And it's, why bother, right? Why bother? Because the MLB is not going to take the team away from them.
No,
They fill
but
seats.
The interesting thing back to what we all do in radio is it's ratings. And if they're not winning, there's no ratings. And the same thing's true with the Denver Broncos, your Denver Broncos, that if they don't start to pull this thing out, people don't watch or don't listen.
Or don't come. And that's what would really piss Pat Bowlen off, is when he saw the attendance start to take a hit.
But I can't understand why a family couldn't get along for that kind of money. I get along with you guys for that kind of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's the same thing. I kind of see it's like General Motors is playing Ford Motor Company. You know, I have friends that, for instance, that are, and I was going to bounce this off of you guys. What happens if Oregon wins this weekend?
Oh, they're probably going to. They're favored by 25 points.
Then what happens?
then CU falls out of the top 20.
Some shine comes off the
whole
thing.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. I mean,
but they'll still be, they're going to pack Folsom like crazy. I mean, the ratings for that game with CSU were amazing.
Did CSU really win that game?
They sure should have. No, CU won, but in two overtime.
No, I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
Did CSU really play a good game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel so. Like, I mean, if CU took CSU to two overtimes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's a win.
Yeah.
That's absolutely a win for that program. And the eyeballs that they got on that program, they would never have gotten otherwise. I mean, at 2:30 in the morning in New York City on the East Coast, 2:30 in the morning, are 11 million people watching that game.
It's amazing.
The shine would be off a little bit nationally, but here people are like, they're dedicated to it like a jihad. It's like they're all in.
Or do they so want a winner?
Do the fans?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. This whole state
it's been a long time for them, so they definitely do. It's fantastic, and I'm not a huge Deion Sanders fan. I think he's kind of a jackass, but I love that he's upset the delicate balance of college football, because all these people are upset with him, and it's like, this is entertainment.
That's
man.
What we opened the show with. Yeah. How do you get?
Oh, he sells the sizzle.
Man. Oh yeah,
yeah, he does.
For sure, he does. So
I watch
big
him.
Time. Yeah. So speaking of the Rockies and all the transplant fans, I had an idea, and this is it just popped into my head. This is a good time to mention it. So you open a restaurant right near Coors Field called the Hometown Cafe.
Yeah.
And you specialize in Chicago things and Pittsburgh St. Louis things and Pittsburgh things. And you draw those crowds when people come out to Coors Field. They go eat at the Hometown Cafe.
You could even,
and get their pierogi or
you
whatever.
You could even change out the banners as every week.
Yeah,
right?
Change your flags
electrically.
Front.
You could change it electrically.
Yeah. Do like the hockey boards have those electronic ads.
Why don't they just go all the way and just do it at Coors Field and give
they pretty much have because you can, when the Cubs are in town, they will sell old style beer.
Sure.
Yeah.
And because they're like, hey, Cubs fans, come on. That to me, I get it. It's money, right? Yeah, they want to make as much money as possible. That's why they have the team. But come on, that's ridiculous.
Well, let the visiting team bat last. I mean, like, do the whole thing.
Well, this is just like their home stadium. If the Raiders are coming to Mile High and they're gonna sell meth.
Right. And they changed the south stands to the black hole.
Some dead batteries throwing snowballs.
They would never do that because that
they have a brand. They have a product.
They have a brand, and the Rockies don't have a brand. So I just know a bunch of people that cover the Rockies. You probably do too, still. And they just, I feel sorry for them that they have to cover this sorry ass team.
Yeah.
But
did you ever get to meet Pat Bowlen?
I played golf with him once.
Did you really?
Yeah.
What about Elway?
I like John immensely. I haven't seen him in a while. My relationship with, and I'm not a sports guy, and it didn't matter to me. I liked John Elway a lot. I witnessed one thing we talked about. It's when the cameras aren't on, when nobody's in a room. And KOA had the exclusive rights to the training. And we'd always do the KHOW morning show on Cheyenne Frontier Days, and we'd always stop on the way up or on the way down. And I saw Elway after practice. He's all beat up and dirty and sweaty. And he rode in a golf cart. And these little kids came out. And they had footballs. And he stopped and he signed the footballs. Nobody watching. And he talked to these little kids. Pat Bowlen, I was against building the stadium. And my boss, Lee Larson, and a really wonderful man by the name of John Beek, who was general manager. And they said, do you play golf? And I said, no. And Lee said, yeah, you play golf. And I said,
you will today.
I play golf. We played at Cherry Hills Country Club. And I'm horrible. I mean, it's laughable to even think about it. But I walked 18 holes with Pat Bowlen. And I think he spoke to me twice. I thought he was a very shy guy. Very proud. I didn't think he was a bad guy at all. I thought he was very, very shy. But I thought he was very smart. And he told me that one thing, that his mother was alive then, that she, the things that were written about them or said about them really troubled her, the mom. And I later skied with his brothers, and they were interesting characters. But I think Pat Bowlen was probably, according to everybody that I know that I respect for, was a great owner.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's my experience.
And that's the thing. And we were, I was for sure, ranting about the new owners of the Broncos. Oh. And
they just fly in for the game.
Yeah, yeah. I was just like, I was like, these are just rich assholes. I go, they wanted to own a sports team, and they got it. They could afford it.
They're no more than that. They're going to take that whole valley and change it.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's all going to change, for sure.
The cards.
Yeah. Elitch is moving, and then they'll take the other side of the highway, too. The Broncos will be up by DIA.
Beyond that, I think what they'll do is they'll create a new world.
New sports entertainment district.
Absolutely.
Like they did in L.A.
Like Jerry Jones.
But is there a selective memory with people like Elway and Pat Bowlen. Because Pat, remember we wore the fur coat and everybody was like, oh, rich asshole, right? And then, but now, like, he's totally revered because he did end up being a good owner. Elway kind of the same way. Joe Williams was always tough on Elway.
Lived
right?
off him. Yeah. Lived off him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just ripped Elway. Yeah. And now somebody says something sideways about Elway, and it's like, well, how dare you? And it's like, oh, no. Elway was kind of like, I don't want to say he was a villain, but he was certainly was not universally accepted back in the day, right?
But my experience with him socially, I don't know anything about football, but socially, he was just like sitting around a table. He was like a regular guy. And I met his dad. His dad's name was Jack.
Yeah.
And Jack Elway and John Beek were great friends. And one night we were at his home in Winter Park, and Jack Elway had a few of these, and he was a storyteller.
Mm.
He was a wonderful storyteller. And he for 3 or 4 hours, we just sat there, and he told sports stories. But they weren't about X's and O's. They were about off-field or on-field. And he was a really great guy. His name was Jack Elway, head coach, and John's dad, you know.
Is these type of characters,
yeah.
if, you know, Elway's heyday was up until the late 90s, but when he came here, it was, what, 82, right? And it's 82? Yeah, 82. So we're talking 82 up until the 90s. We're talking about social media being instantaneous. Some of these characters, would that have been a huge hindrance to some of their off-field activities?
You know, it's like when you're a kid, and I was in love with baseball, in love with prize fighting, and you would hear the stories. And I think those stories are still there. They have to be. But it will take a time frame before, you know, the stories are told. But we were always in a position where we heard the stories, and I'm sure you guys hear the stories. And there were guys that you liked that you knew were
not great guys
and off the leash.
How do you rectify that then?
Well, I didn't do sports radio. So I was sports because we're talking about sports. When it came to politics, we just mentioned in the last segment, the mayor.
Yeah.
We did the story on the governor, Roy Romer. Patty Calhoun breaks the story on Roy Romer with a long-going affair with his chief of staff, the greatest name in politics, B.J. Thornberry. and Patricia had the heart to do that story. We did it. And so there's a lot of people that really didn't want you to do that story. It's like the DIA deals and the land deals and the scams. And,
oh, God.
I mean, that was incredible. It was a gift if you were more than willing to take the chance and then not be invited anywhere or have people turn their backs when you walked in the room, which was kind of my experience, but what did I care?
Again, as we stopped, who cares, right?
Based on your your history and your ear to the ground, did Kathy Sabin and John Elway have a thing that you're aware of?
First I heard of that.
Damn it. He's been masturbating to this for years.
Wow. Now, you know, I hear everything, too. I'm like,
well, if you hear everything and you never heard
I've
that.
I've never heard that.
Okay. Then it probably isn't a thing.
I heard a lot of other stuff.
He's been beating the drum and beating something else to that for a wild time. Thing, and now he can't do it anymore.
Actually, she's a really nice woman.
She is. Yeah, she's just beautiful.
Yeah, no,
even at her advanced age,
so
she's gorgeous.
I've got some insight on this one.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I know a guy who dated Janet Elway after they split.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He says 100% take it to the bank that happens. 100%.
Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow. Colin, right. You're back, so, in business. You
know, back in business. So
I know a guy who knows a guy.
This sounds like a deal on the street when I'm growing up. I know a guy that knows a guy.
Yeah,
a guy,
absolutely.
But hey, he is, I don't know. He's very confident about all of these things.
It's pretty much time for the fourth quarter.
Already?
Well, yeah, we're gonna bring it home. We're gonna talk a little Broncos, but we're gonna try to pick our guest brain on some things. So
we gotta talk some Bobert too.
Oh yeah, we gotta talk that. I gotta say my mother-in-law went to see that show like 2 days later, and I was like, another incident gonna happen. So I was hoping it didn't go down. But yeah, let's talk about all that. When we come back right after this.
Want to do one for like mutiny or something? You can whip a mutiny out.
Sure, I could. Yeah, I could whip a mutiny out.
Let's do that.
I'm recording, so go for it.
Do you want to go to your anarchist bookstore and?
Okay. You're obviously longtime friends with Matt.
Very
and
close.
Mutiny.
Yeah.
How do you two politically get along?
We don't discuss it.
You don't just don't discuss
it. We
just
don't discuss it.
You guys just leave it
out.
We
just focus on our friendship.
That's great. That's yeah. Awesome.
Yep. It's the only way. I will not spend a fucking dime there.
It's not your scene. I get it.
It's not my scene. But, you know, I'm about to do a read for him starting right now. Mutiny Information Cafe is the place to go for used books, new graphic novels, used records, delicious coffee. They make iced coffee with ice cubes made out of coffee. Now, that's just smart, folks. That's just good thinking. So go in there, see Matt and Jim right there on South Broadway, just north of Sportique Scooters, I might add, and tell them the South Stand sent you, won't you?
All right. Do you know this, Peter?
Well, it's 1969, okay. Walk across the USA.
I
probably,
do.
You probably heard it.
Me yeah. And you. Tell me.
This is Iggy and the Stooges.
There you go.
1969. Recorded
Iggy
in 1969.
Pop.
Yeah, Iggy Pop. Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Cool pick.
You know, I just saw him. In concert.
Did you?
In California. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, you went to the whole Goth Fest thing.
Yeah, I went to the Goth Fest.
Nice. Iggy's got to be at least 77,
my age.
Right?
He's got to be.
Yeah, he's got to be.
He's 77. That's exactly how old he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And that motherfucker can go off.
He moves, man. He can move.
Yeah, he was wild. Look at Susie and the Banshees, too.
Yeah, oh, nice.
Look at Mick Jagger.
That was my first club show I ever saw, with Susie Sue.
Oh, wow.
What did they say? They said they were like, they had Mick Jagger and Mitch McConnell.
There you are.
Mitch McConnell, and they were like, hey, these guys are the same age.
Same 81.
look what sex, drugs, and rock and roll did for one of them.
You know it.
But we don't know. We don't know if Mitch might have had a lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll too.
I'm
we're not
sure he did, but kind of on the DL.
It wasn't publicized as much as Mitch.
That's what guys. Guys like Peter are there to uncover.
Mitch looks better than Keith Richards. There's that.
Yeah, but Keith Richards is probably in better shape.
Yeah, he probably is.
But he looks better.
So I mean, you know, obviously the Rolling Stones are sex, drugs, and rock and roll success story. There's a lot of non-success stories, right?
The entertainment in and of itself, and that's where you guys are working, it's the devil, you know. It just is such a part of it that if you don't watch your step,
so many people have probably fallen off, died, done whatever, for right, you've probably known tons, and it's a crazy thing because us in our 50s, like, this was the time where all of a sudden these people that we've kind of hung around with and partied with all this time, they seem, all of a sudden that's when it starts to kick in, right? Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, this guy died or this guy's had some problems. Yeah. And it's kind of like a, you can only get so many years before it catches up to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's all catching up, which reminds me, you and I have something in common, which I haven't mentioned to you. CHF. Congestive heart failure.
Yeah, I just went through it.
Yeah, I went through, I have it. I mean, once you have it, you have it. Yeah. Well, most of us will get it eventually, but I have it at age 51. And I went into a really bad, in June, I went through really bad AFib, like really bad. Ended up in the emergency room. It was horrible. So
all of that.
Yeah, and I have that in common. And then, but I'm 30 fucking years younger than you.
Yeah, when I was your age. No, it's part of it. It's, you know, it's going to catch up at a certain age, and you can
and
only...
You lived pretty hard. Right?
Yeah.
In your 30s and 40s?
I got sober 37 years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I wasn't aware it'd been that long. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Been sober 30.
And why did you go down that road?
I just got done having lunch with somebody trying to explain this. It was following Alan Berg's murder. And Alan was the first truly sober person I ever knew. His disease, alcoholism, and my disease, but his disease... He was an attorney in Chicago, and a very good one. But his behavior eventually got him disbarred. He tells a story that he was court-appointed on a murder beef. He remembers leaving his office on a Friday. He woke up Monday in St. Louis with a hooker.
Ugh.
And that was the last straw. And he got disbarred, and he came out here, and he gained his sobriety. He had a shirt store, and he had a shoe store, and a guy... came in who was a talk show host at KWBZ and dupes him and says, you know, man, you're in the wrong business. You could come and do radio. And so favorite Berg story, I'm doing the morning show with Bob Lee. It's a hit show in KLEK. Elvis died.
Mm.
And grown men, I'm answering the phone, and grown men are calling up crying. You know, he's gone. Berg goes on the air and says the guy couldn't carry a tune. And that's going the other way, right? And he lights it up. But he was sober. And he was the first real sober person I knew. And I was so out of control. And after his death, it was just a question of time. I was at least relatively smart enough to understand that I was going to die. And that's what we're talking about, when you know about certain things inside of you, there's a voice that says, okay, keep it up.
Right.
And you know the voice.
So were you that bad? I mean,
yeah.
were you just up against it? Yeah.
No, I was that bad. And that bad and more.
So did you use 12 steps?
I went
or
into.
Or did you go another way?
I actually, that's kind of way away from what's public, but... I, in essence, turned myself in to two really great physicians. And then, well, I'll tell you a story. And so a guy, I won't use Kent because, you know, the other A is anonymous and you can't use, it isn't polite.
Of course.
But I was afraid to go to a meeting and I was afraid to stand up because I was Peter Boyles, you know. And so these guys took me, this is a true story. They said, okay, we'll go to Colorado Springs to the Air Force Academy to the Officers Club. And I'll tell you how screwed up I was. And I remember we went in a Lincoln. I remember who was in the front seat, who was in the back seat with me holding my hand. It was a woman friend. And I always told the story about her being with me, holding my hand, going to Colorado Springs to the O Club. 3 years ago, she takes me aside. She said, Peter, I wasn't in that car. True story.
Wow.
And so that was the first time I kind of remember standing up and they say, you know, copping to it, you know, I'm alcoholic. And but this one man was so instrumental in my life, and his significant guy, but it's nobody's business. But he took me and he said, and this is what I've told other people, there's only three places where guys like me end up, and you look around you and you'll know that this is true. We end up, they say, in an institution, which could be a hospital or a jail cell. We end up on a morgue slab, or we end up in a meeting. And so many brilliant, talented men and women that I've known for the 40-plus years I've been in this business went on the morgue slab. Some of them went to jail. And it didn't, that's the great sadness.
And I could only assume that in your industry, alcoholism is prevalent.
I think there's something about creative people. And it's we're not going
for sure.
There is something about this business. And I used to think of it as a shit magnet, that it would just pull all of it. But there's something about these brilliant, gifted people that I've had the pleasure of, at least I'm saying, hey, Peter, how are you? So flawed. And I think that I'm not a big believer in, I'm not a religious fellow, but if the universe gives you this, it's going to take that.
Sure.
And I started to drink when I was 13.
Mm.
And, but I've met all of these wonderful, a lot of writers and actors and a lot of athletes that somehow you carry that disease. And I just got done talking about it to somebody. It's important. I said, my disease, and think of it as a disease, and you got a chance. My disease wants to kill me.
I am an alcoholic. I'm going to stand on the table right now and say that. I am, and I've been treated for such. This is a little over disclosure, little personal disclosure.
It's all right, we're getting to the core of it.
I never have felt like my disease was going to kill me because, well, ultimately, I will die probably sooner than I otherwise would.
Huh?
But it doesn't impact me on a day-to-day basis. Although, don't tell my cardiologist that.
Now, someone who's gone through it for all these years is going to tell you you're full of shit.
Well, no, right? Let me two things. One is this: he's got a beer in his hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Never talk to somebody about drinking when they're drinking. That's number one rule. Number two is it's an individual call.
Sure.
And when I hear people say, "Well, da 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 da," is an alcoholic, I said, that's not up to you. When it was up to me, and like I said, it was such a bizarre story when that woman had to say to me, Peter, I wasn't with you. I told that story for 35 years, and she was in the back seat holding my hand, and I was shaking like a – and she said, no, I wasn't in the car. And I went, wow. So that's – but it's a disease. If you treat it like a disease, you have a chance. If you treat it like it's a behavior, you'll lose every time. Like the city of Denver, this new mayor – if you thought, is it possible to get a worse mayor than Michael Hancock? The answer is yes.
That's shocking.
You just got him.
That's shocking.
You just got him.
And why?
What he's doing with this homeless stuff. I mean, it's just like these people will take from you whatever you have to give and want more.
Seems like a Band-Aid, right?
It's senseless. You know, it's like, and there was a guy by the name of Bob Cote, the late, great Bob Cote,
Step 13.
Bobby knew. I mean, I was with Bob so many times. I was a board member and still remain at Meritus on their board. And these parents would come in, and they had the 30-year-old kid living in the basement. And Bob would say, do you want to help them? Yes, we do. Don't help them. And they couldn't understand that, the tough love. Like, anytime you want to feed these people, give them someplace to stay, medical care, they're not going to quit.
There was just this last weekend down in lower downtown on what they call Whiskey Row.
Yeah.
There was a shooting into a crowd.
Yeah.
And the fellow who they haven't caught a fellow yet. They don't necessarily have a suspect. But the shooting came from one of the encampments downtown. And now they're running prostitution rings.
Sure.
And
they had a bar going.
But here's what the point I was going to make.
Yeah.
The last mayor, I never heard him mention it at all. Never seemed to do anything about it. Right. So even though you might go, well, this is kind of bullshit, maybe this isn't going to probably work, at least he'll try something, and maybe when it fails miserably.
But it's already failed in other cities.
Oh, yeah, sure, for sure. But once it fails, then you can say, hey, it failed, try something else.
Well, and
my point is that it was never mentioned the whole time Hancock.
I agree with that.
It was never mentioned.
But Hancock, remember, let me tell you something.
At least he swept.
This is my take on the current mayor. You know what he's really doing? Running for governor.
And then president.
That's all. Yeah. That's all they're doing, right?
Because Polis is running. Watch. I mean, Jared Polis, by the way, is the smartest most gifted politician the state of Colorado has. He's maybe going to step up and run for the big chair. This guy, who is giving away and going to wreck the city even further, it doesn't work. It didn't work in Philly. It doesn't work.
Housing first does not work.
It doesn't.
No.
And I will give Michael Johnston credit for this much. He's out there. He's available.
That's what I'm saying. It'll fall on its face, but at least he's saying, let's try this first.
And I got to meet him and shake his hand and talk to him and express my distaste for what he's doing one-on-one. And that I have to give him credit for. He's done so far, I believe, 12 town hall meetings in various parts of town, mostly at churches.
It's fine, but politicians, by their very nature, are total scumbags, right? Is that a fair assessment, or is that unfair?
7 out of 10.
Okay, that's wow. that's a pretty good percentage.
Yeah.
And granted, there's a few people who you see them and you go, okay, that person seems like they give a shit. They're trying something. Most of them, they're just trying. They're just trying to get the next grift on. Right?
I hope that you're right and that he tries this, it doesn't work, and then he tries something else.
Got to keep trying,
but.
Colin and I are going to release a treatise soon. We're going to get together. We're going to write, because Colin, both of us see it as a major issue. We might come from it from different viewpoints, but we're going to write something that's going to be the definitive guide on how to cure it. I believe we're going to come together and do that soon, aren't we?
I would love that.
Okay, good.
Remember,
because I live this.
Yeah, oh, yeah
I live
yeah,
this
I
on
don't,
a daily basis.
I don't. You have to see it every day.
Yes, the fentanyl crisis, the overdosing, the mental illness, schizophrenia. These things are on my doorstep. I live them every day. Just down the street, the bus stop at the corner of Alameda and Broadway is a lightning rod for drug activity. There's all kinds of dealing going on there, and there's all kinds of pain and human misery and a lack of dignity, and those things are disturbing, and I would love to find some common ground, and I think about it all the fucking time. I have put so much energy, and I don't know what the answers are.
Historically, fentanyl, you know, is coming from China.
Via Mexico.
We and the British did that to the Chinese. It was called the Opium Wars. The Chinese have very long memories. They're seeing this as in reverse to what Western powers did to them. A lot of the great fortunes in this country were built in the opium business and the slave trade. And so we collectively brought opium to China during the time of the last mandarins. It lives in China until the Maoists come. And I'm by no ways a Maoist, but so Mao comes up with a concept called the Barefoot Doctors and the Red Army. And they go into the little villages and they find the opium smokers. And they say, we'll be back. If you're still smoking opium, when we come back, we're going to kill you. There's not a problem today, and that's harsh. It was Mao, but now as they're muling fentanyl into this country, it's just to get even.
I firmly believe that and what the internet, like the propaganda on the internet, has been outside influences too. And I think that everybody else saw an opening and they said, look at these dumbass Americans. Yeah. Let's fuck them up.
Look at the money.
Yeah. And it's all come from different ways. And I think it's been a, maybe not coordinated, but it's certainly been directed at people in this country.
If there weren't customers for that drug, it would stack up, and it doesn't.
Yep.
It just flows. And perhaps, you know, and my cynical part of me is maybe there just isn't. Maybe there's myself being totally flawed. What was it about me? And I think it was genetic predisposition, cultural predisposition. I can give you a thousand excuses or readinesses for the disease that I carry within me. But it's real. And when these guys are junkies, I went up and lived in Vancouver on the street for 3 days, Stephen Tubbs, myself, and Mark Crowley.
Oh, that's right.
Because that's where they have what they want to bring here. You can shoot. It was a vision of hell. I mean, and I'm not a tough guy, but I've been in some bad places. I haven't seen anything like that. I mean, that was like junkies.
And this is where the needle exchange is.
No, not a needle exchange. You can legally shoot. And you know, and there are elected Democrats here at Colfax and Broadway that want to bring that here. This isn't needle exchange. This is you can shoot dope.
Harm reduction, they call it.
I went in one of these places. We finally got in. And I watched it. And there's an alley behind it. And this one guy came up to me, and he's going to be a hard guy. And he said, "You want to come out in the alley?" I was, "Sure." He said, "You got a watch on." I said, "No." He said, "Take those rings off." I said, "All right," because you know what was in the alley. Went out in the alley, and it was like this vision of hell. And it's just up and down the alley. There's junkies, lenders, junkies in the street. Everybody's selling hot merchandise. And the cops don't do anything. Cops stand there, and they watch it.
It's like a futuristic, like it's horrible, like sci-fi movie.
It's horrible, yeah. And they want to bring that here in Vancouver. Now it's spread, and now they have drugs and vending machines.
And there's elements here. I mean, even taking light rail by our Absolutely. House. Oh. I mean, it's
the mugger mover.
Whenever I go to light rail, it's like three different huddles of people just with coats over their heads and just billows of smoke coming out, and it ain't weed.
No.
It's not weed.
But
they're like, and I don't know, like, why do we have the only public train I've ever seen where you don't have to pay to take it?
Well, because everybody stayed away from it for that reason.
But, even like every single one, like Paris, New York, Chicago, even
pay.
Las Vegas, London,
yeah.
you have to pay to
because
get into the station.
RTD is a failure. The whole thing is a failure.
It's...
Whether it's the train to the plane or whether it's the buses or whatever it is, it's a failure.
Like not having turnstiles to get into it is such an issue.
Let's talk about something positive, right. The Denver Broncos. We're going to have to wrap it up soon. I could sit here all fucking night and talk about that. But
dude, what a golden opportunity they had. They had the Raiders at home, followed by the Washington Commanders at home. Everybody else in the division has lost games. All they had to do was beat the easiest teams on their schedule, and they are 2-0 and atop of the AFC West. And instead, they're 0-2 and in the basement. Kansas City's lost. San Diego's lost twice now. Or LA, the LA Chargers. And the Raiders have one win, and it's against them. I mean, that was there for the taking, and it's just un-fucking believable that we're stand here today at 0-2. I cannot fucking believe it.
This is a question for Peter. Do the Broncos, even though they're horrible right now, do they still hold that same weight that they've had all the time?
Wow.
Do you think, think maybe because we've had so many different people here, it's diluted a bit?
I don't pay much attention. I have my grandson. Really, he should be sitting here talking sports with you guys.
We have him, and he can answer those.
But he would probably have a take on it. What I think is interesting is and I know some people at KOA, the attention's really on CU.
Mm.
I mean, that's
And the Nuggets.
And the Nuggets. But that season has – I like what you said in the open, but what happens? Better question: what happens if they can't get past Oregon? And does the shine come off? And
I mean, they barely beat CSU. They should have destroyed CSU.
They were favored by 23.
They were 24. Yeah. I know this because I put 40 on the cover and 40 on the win. Oh my God! I almost won so much money. I almost made about $700.
But
I broke even.
Yeah, you take the blowtorch KOA. Yeah. It has the Rockies, it has the CU Buffs, and it has the Broncos. Who do you think their comer is right now?
Yeah, CU.
Sure.
Until they lose in Oregon. We'll see.
But the point of it is that gave them life.
Yeah.
Because I think, what do I know? But, you know, the ratings weren't great. And as we've all talked about, ratings equals revenue.
Right.
Revenue equals ratings. And if you don't have the numbers, nobody's going to buy. And I know that there was a season back a few years ago that you don't become a sponsor. You're really kind of an underwriter of the broadcast. There were major sponsors in the Front Range that wanted their money back. because your Denver Broncos were not. And they consider, you know, you get the monthlies, you get the weeklies, you get the overnights. Nielsen gets the overnights. They can see if there's nobody there. But you told me, well, back to the wall. It's they know.
When the owners fly in for the next game, they're going to be told that. And they're going to be like, what?
They fly in the morning and they leave that afternoon.
You know what's crazy? Russell Wilson is such a huge disappointment, or so we think. Yeah. But he's in the top five in quarterback rating.
Oh, yeah,
his yardage is good. Touchdowns are good. I cannot believe the defense.
It's a huge mess. I guess what I'm getting at is that they're always like the cultural cornerstone, mm-hmm. the sports cultural always. Cornerstone of Denver, Colorado in general. Yep. And I don't think they'll ever not be, because there's a lot of people like I didn't go to see you. I don't really care about see you. There's a lot of people like that, but everybody likes the Broncos. But the problem is, I think as they continue to suck, that support's going to erode. And as people have like kids, then normally they'd go, oh, I want my kid to be a Bronco fan. They might be like, maybe you go root for somebody else. Maybe that erodes,
like
right?
The Nuggets, for example.
Exactly. Well, like true. The Rockies, you know, there's a bunch of people who like, maybe they have a spouse who's a transplant and they're like, yeah, why don't you root for the Cubs? The Rockies suck. And then they're never going to get that fan base to come up like
you know
the
who really has it? The Green Bay Packers.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. I'm not just talking about fandom. I'm not talking about sports. But there are three or four generations of people that have lived in Colorado that are Packers fans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like. You know.
I mean, the city owns the team. It's a cool story they have. I grew up in Chicago, so I hate the Packers. It's a thing. But we watched the CU-CSU game in Pueblo. We were in Pueblo this weekend. And
Pueblo. I'm sorry.
Puebla, as some of the locals call it. Thank you. I appreciate that. But people who did not go to college, they are huge CU fans, and we were like the lone CSU people in there, and given it to us, and they certainly did not go to CSU.
No, they call them Nebraska is famous. I've read this. They call them artificial alumni, because there's nothing else.
You got to pick a team, right?
Well, but if you Lincoln, didn't go to college, there's no big pro sports teams, and so it was go Big Red,
right?
And so these
big in Nebraska,
big BBR, baby.
Yeah, farmers that never took a 101 English class, and they're huge Nebraska fans because it's what you say.
Yeah, and we were really respectful through the whole thing when we all thought CSU was going to win, and then all of a sudden they tied it up, and they were like giving it to us. And then my wife is like, well, we actually went to CSU.
Don't tell them that.
And then what did they say?
All right, college boy.
Silence after that.
Real quick, and then we got to wrap it up. We'll get Peter out of here. He's got another podcast to do. He's a big podcaster now.
I broke my cherry.
That's right. That's awesome. We're happy to have helped. Somebody had said that CU is now a black America's college team. And I was like, that's cool. And I was like, have they ever been to Boulder? Have they been to Boulder? Because I get it with Dion and his family and everybody.
Little Wayne was here and Kawhi Leonard.
The Rock and Kyle Lowry.
And if black America wants to get behind a college team, I'm all for it. Just know that Boulder... It might not be that. It might not be that amenable to you if you showed up there.
Well, you know, Lil Wayne loves the weed. I think
so. So before we get out of here, I've got one last thing I want to do.
Okay.
And this is a treat for Peter. I'm going to do an impression.
Okay.
You're going to know who this is. This is my impression. All right.
This is a Trump impression.
So proud of my radio home in the Rocky Mountain West, the 50,000 watt. Blowtorch 850 KOA. Paul Harvey. Every day. Every day.
Then you have to end it with good day.
Yeah. Paul Harvey.
he had this little spot that happened between other commercials.
That's a great story on, if you got a second,
on
how things are lost. In the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and the first part of the 60s, Paul Harvey was a guaranteed ratings getter, would appear at high noon, 12 o'clock. The demo died. Everybody that loved Paul Harvey went big casino. So all of a sudden, Paul's like talking to himself, demanding the same amount of money, but his ratings are gone because his demo moved on. It's what you guys have talked about for as long as we've been sitting here. Revenue is ratings. Ratings is revenue. It's all in demos. It's about who's listening to what you do, watching what you do, watching those games, listening to Donald Trump or whatever happens. It's all numbers. It took me a long time to figure that out.
That's right. It's all moving. It's going to constantly be moving.
For the rest of the story.
That was Paul Harvey.
That's right. Yeah. Well, this has been awesome.
That was fun, guys.
I kept going, I got to get home and put this on the internet. I'm like, we can sit here and talk all night.
Sure.
It's fantastic, Peter. You've always been super kind. We appreciate your time to come in and talk to us. It's been good. Like I said, we've got dozens of other topics we could get to, but you know, there's only so much space on the internet, so we have to, you know, we have to make sure.
Well, let me do this. If I do what I want to do, come and do my YouTube show with me, the three of you.
Listen, you heard him. He's good, isn't he? He's fantastic. He's got a great voice.
He can sell.
He's got a great voice.
I tell you what.
He always had a future.
I'll have you guys on before Thanksgiving.
Deal.
That sounds good. It's awesome. Thank you so much, sir. It's been a pleasure. Baseball. That's Peter Boyles, everybody.
The one and only?
Yeah. You've got a Saturday show. Tell about your Saturday show real quick.
Well, I do a 9 to noon on 710 KNUS, and I think I'm trying to get Sandy and Joe the Hitman Williams on to talk sports.
Nice.
This
good,
Saturday.
Yeah, good. Now you're primed. You're ready to get him on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Excellent.
Prime.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you being on here with us. This has been great. South Stands Denver Fancast. We're back at it. Second show in a row. Can we do a third? We'll find out next week, baby.
Stay tuned.
All right. Until next time. Adios.
We love you, Denver. Dope.